Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and get our seats and we'll continue on. Robert, yeah.
Robert's right behind you, sir.
All right. Robert, I think you still have the floor. Go ahead and continue.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Back from the break, is there any questions at this time? All right, go ahead.
So we continue this process into September, and again, in the report, and if you were to read it, we put in the report every single NOAA three-month forecast, the ENSO models, and the data that we use to predict whether or not inflows are not going to be at the blue line is what was being predicted. And again, the red line shows it's down low. That's our conservative line. So on September 1st, for the predicted inflow case, TIE would still have 44.1 feet in it. And with the low inflow case, it'd be at 8.2. Now, as we mentioned earlier, if we went to, instead of the FERC license limit, we went to the 1260 board approved draft limit, we would have curtailed probably here. The challenge with it is I can make this curve as conservative as I want, and so if I made that 25% instead of 30, or 35% instead of 30, that's going to move this up or down. So we base this on industry standard.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I don't understand why. Of course, you can make the line anything you want, but if the industry standard is 30, why are we talking about making it anything we want?
Because if we're talking about changing where we draft it to, it's in effect the same thing as changing where the line is. So if I move the blue line up, I could have done the same thing by moving the red line up. But or moving the red line down.
That's falsifying information to be able to justify decision making, in my opinion, by artificially changing the line off of what an industry standard is.
If the blue line was at 1300, for example, if the board approved it to 1300, and that's what the board wanted me to do, is run it against the red line against the blue line, we would have curtailed June 15th or whatever.
But those are not decisions we've ever been asked to participate in previously, is that correct?
The decision on curtailment of TIE has never been made, and this would be the first instance that it's had to be made.
So I want to make a clarity statement here. There was no falsifying of any documents or anything. I don't want anybody that's listening on the line to get the impression that things are being skewed in a way that would be inappropriate. We did follow industry best practices.
If I may, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to suggest that stuff was, but when Robert says, well, I could make this line anything I want. I could make it 25. I could make it 35. I guess I'm not understanding what the purpose of that comment is, other than to arbitrarily move a line to justify a decision.
The purpose is, as Steve stated earlier, we could make that line with no inflows. That'd be 100%. And what he asked me earlier, why not with no inflows? That'd be 100% below average. That'd be zero. I could make it that way. I could, at the discretion of the board, I could make it 35%. I could make it 25%. That's the intent of mine.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
So Robert, if I may, can you back calculate? Let's say if we used one of the limits, either the drawdown limit, board approved drawdown limit, could we back calculate, say if we assumed this at this particular date, what would we need for a characteristic curve of inflows? Could that be done on this type of model?
Could we go back and find the exact date at which point we needed to curtail?
Well, if you have a series of models like this, could then experiment and say, well, hey, what would it take for me to get down to this level in terms of lack of inflows?
And we do that in the proofing section of the of the model there, where I actually take actual inflows, and this is based on the response of the lake, recorded response of the lake, and the megawatts of the units, and you can actually determine within a cubic foot or few how much inflow is in the lake. Very, very, very accurate.
Thanks.
And so, yes, you can do that. And plus, in the past, we know what the loads are, so we can use actual loads and actual inflows, and then we can go back to a date and say and pretend, okay, we forecasted this. Let's say we think that the inflows are going to be this, but it's actuals. And we think that the loads are going to be this, but they're actuals. And we're going to start with the lake level here, and we're going to see what the model does. How does the model respond to that? And I've done that in this report. I have done that on multiple occasions. And I contacted Chuck Howard, who was the designer of this algorithm. He designed it in 2010, presented to the board of directors in 2010. The proof of the model was done in 2010, and it hasn't changed since, because the numbers in the model don't change. The size of the drainage basin at Tai'i didn't change, and the lake size didn't change. So the model is still completely accurate. But I did proof it again, and it is extremely within 0.25% accurate throughout an entire year. I can get to that slide here in a second.
Yeah.
So at this level right here, this is, again, in comparison to FERC. If we look at what the board-approved level is, we would be 1.8 feet below.
If we got 30% below the worst-case scenario, that is correct. As you can see, we've never seen a 30% below in the history of SEPA. The red line is the lowest we've ever seen in our entirety, and in 2018, it turned out to be a reality. But I was making decisions in 2018 based on historical information.
So, Robert, can I just ask, just for clarification, so the red line here represents the lowest level we've ever seen. And sorry, what year was that again?
2018.
So that 2018 is the absolute lowest we've ever seen?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's 30% below the average, Robert.
So the red line is 30% below the average,
yeah.
But coincidentally, 30% below the average is 103 CFS on average for the year. And in 2018, that's what we saw. It's in this report.
And just for my own reference, prior to the intertie, did Tai'i ever drop down to any level? I mean, has the northern communities ever drawn down the project to the point of having to run through a diesel run?
I would assume it would never spill. There's two things that changed.
Never drafted.
There's two things that changed. Not only did the intertie add additional load from Ketchikan, but what I seen in that time period was loads in Petersburg and Rainbow nearly tripled. So they went from an average of 3 to 9 on average. Peaks got extremely high to the point where Tai'i, a few weeks ago, did not have enough capacity nearly to meet the peaks of Petersburg and Wrangell. So loads have increased significantly as well.
Yeah, and I think that's because a few years back, we encouraged all of our residents to switch over to hydroelectric heat.
It's a good
from
thing.
Diesel. And we've kind of driven some of that within the community, and we're hoping that we can continue to meet the needs.
And that's for a discussion, I think, in a different forum. Can I continue?
Anybody have any other questions? Continue.
September 17th. So there was, as I mentioned, there were more than just one. It wasn't just the model that helped our decision-making process. Short-term forecast. What we had been seeing on the weather undergrounds and the timeofday.coms and all the different tools we use for that short-term 10-day forecast had not been consistent throughout middle of August through September with what NOAA was saying for long-term forecast. We also seen a high-pressure system building in the Gulf of Alaska. Andy spoke of the Sky Rivers.
Atmospheric Rivers.
There was a high pressure system building. In addition, KPU's load was 160% greater than our average. more than our expected, and I'll show that here in a second. And again, recent history of the forecast were not consistent with actual precipitation. So even the forecast that we were getting on a 10-day, we're not seeing the rains that they were saying, even on a 10-day forecast. So something during that time frame was obviously going on with the weather. Looking at the NOAA 3-month look ahead, an A in green means above average, and the darkness of the green is the percent of probability. So for September, October, and November, it was an equal chance of precipitation, of average, above average, or below average precipitation. That would indicate that the blue line was the most probable line. This is a NOAA forecast. This is the one that we put in. We talk about it in the Tuesday operations call. This is something we look at every week. It's really only updated once a month, and then re-updated towards the end of the month. But every month it is updated. All right. In addition, what the 2018 operations plan was also built on was these ENSO models. These are what NOAA uses. The CPC, Climate Prediction Center, this is what NOAA uses to predict El Nino conditions, warming patterns, wet weather coming. When I built the 2018 operations plan in December of 2017, you'd see this line was below zero. And that's why I forecasted extremely low inflows. I stated we're going to see something like 1999 type weather. It's going to be really bad. It's going to be really low. And we saw the draft on both lakes was nearly on top of the guide curve that was built in 2017. In about July, that moved from La Nina condition, and the ocean temperatures were increasingly getting above average. Forecasts for that were showing that we would be by the September, October, and then into November and January, we'd be getting a half a degree to 1 degree centigrade above average temperatures. And what that means, and what we recently got in an article and issued by NOAA, is we are in today an El Nino condition. There is an El Nino warning that has been issued. But the indicators were there. And in El Nino years, it's always warmer and wetter. But why wasn't it? Why wasn't it in September? Why wasn't it in October? Andy kind of talks about it. The sky rivers, the atmospheric rivers. And so leading up to September 17th from September 1st was just building and building of high pressure. And an article came out on September 24th that stated, this is why you're not seeing your rain. Yes, the ocean's warmer and the rains are coming, but all the storms were being deflected off of Southeast Alaska and they weren't coming inland. So all the rain that we should have got in September and October at the tune of maybe 30 inches additional, which is a significant amount in Tidy Lake, did not come. In addition, KPU loads from SEPA, as measured across L1 by our STIX program, had been increasing. The draw on SEPA system had been increasing, and the question was whether or not Ketchikan residents were turning their heaters on. It was in August. The answer was no. The loads were increasing, but hydro generation was being reduced. This is something that SEPA gets in the Tuesday operations call, but does not, because KPU Hydro is dispatched prior to SEPA Hydro, we do not have any control over this event. So this was another leading factor as to why we curtailed on September 17th. And seen here, from August 15th to September 17th is where I get the 160% average. These are all the average years, all the years prior for that time period, and this was 2018. So that effect has a significant significantly faster draft rate on both Tahi and Swan Lake. And we knew that if we didn't curtail, that it was going to be somewhere between 37 and a half feet, which is what we predicted, except for now with the weather prediction of that high anomaly, high pressure system in the Gulf of Alaska, we expected it to be dry for a couple weeks, but not through all the way through October and into November.
Robert, if I can interrupt you, when that increased 160%, what increase in draft rate was that? Can you give us an idea on that reservoir?
So, if on average we're running around 200 megawatt hours per day from KBU, and we bumped it up to over 300, to 320 megawatt hours per day, a megawatt hour at Swan Lake is equivalent to, or 400 and some odd change megawatt hours equivalent to a foot. So it was about a foot a day we increased from about 0.6 to 0.75 feet to over a foot a day.
So Robert, so August is critical to Ketchikan in that it's probably the peak of the salmon season, salmon processing every August. I can recall that one of the firms here broke the gigawatt hour per month club in August. So every August I look at the highest lows from the seafood producers. So I was wondering now, the close down, did Petersburg, they close theirs down? Because I think what we'd be seeing here is the increased use of these facilities if others around the area are closing down. Do we know?
Yeah, ours were running. We have one that didn't open at all, but yes, all the rest of them were running.
All Wrangell's processors were up and running, although we were a bit of an abridged season, I think, with the one processor, but we were up and running.
Jeremy has a question.
Jeremy.
I'm not allowed to ask a question here of Robert for your model. Jeremy Bynum, KPU. If you go to your model for curtailment,
I think just one more here.
Right here.
There you go.
So one of the quick questions I have is so this model is a snapshot in time. So you run this, this model was ran on what date?
So when we run these models, we run them on this date.
Right.
But you're not going to see all this fancy stuff on the model output,
no,
because this is for a slideshow. But this is the result of each one of these models that we ran.
Correct.
And this is superimposed on something.
So this is on the 15th of September, correct?
15th of September, that's correct.
How does your model take into account the existing weather condition? So when I look at this on the 15th of December, this is you stopping the transport of power to Ketchikan for across the STI. So you see a rebound in the lake, and it's a pretty significant rebound in the lake on the 15th, starting on the 15th.
Correct.
However, the conditions at the time showed a dramatic draft rate on the lake, right?
So
is this taking into consideration the existing weather at the time, or is this saying that as soon as you stop that transport, that lake is going to immediately rebound up?
The model assumes the inflows from the previous 5 years, 6 years,
correct,
and it goes with the 30% average and 10% above average. Predictions on weather, as we all know, are only good as far as you can throw them. Maybe 10 days is the best that you're going to get out of a real weather prediction. Typically, they say 3 days, you can rely on it, but after that, you can't rely on it.
So this is basically a 5-year average and then a 30-year prediction below. How does it take into account that the current weather condition we're in is not any of those? So we have a draft rate of a huge negative slope on the lake, both Swan and Tahi, at the time when the model is ran. It's taking into consideration what the average year would be in the 30 below. But we aren't seeing existing conditions that meet that criteria. So how does this model take that into consideration, or does it?
Does not. And I'd like to address that, and this is one thing that Chuck Howard mentioned to the board of directors in 2010. And he stated that the only way to improve the model is to improve the inflow predictions, to improve the weather predictions. Because as I illustrate here later, if you know what's going to happen, then you can predict what's going to happen.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we're going to discuss this some more, but those two variables, if you can't do any, you know, the weather due to whatever the sky lakes or the inflows aren't there, then to me, we have to have a safe buffer to ensure that the power sales agreement is met. You know, I'll just quickly say that from Wrangell's perspective, with no other hydro options but that, we have to have a safe buffer to ensure that we're getting our needs filled out of Kai'i. Because what you just said is, that's the only way to improve this model, and that's probably a ways off. And obviously, weather is weather, and there's going to be changes. We're probably entering a very unstable time.
There are two ways to do that, Steve. That's to change the 30% to a different number, or move the blue line.
Well, I think I've gotten more involved in operations than I ever wanted to with the crisis for our community. And one of the things for me, a frustration has been, is that we utilize the very bottom in our number of days left in our reservoir. And I think that would be a starting point, the blue, that part for sure. That I would rather have a realistic to the board approved draft limit. But the second thing is part way through on those op plans that I started getting last October, we changed even how we calculated the total number of days left in the reservoir partway along the way, and then we dropped that. And we need a consistent method so that I can look at the gauges as a layperson and say, well, our tank's almost empty. I wonder if that's a problem, or our tank's almost full, because we actually started to have contradicting gauges even with this inflow calculation.
Can I address you?
Yeah.
Those gauges haven't changed any. What has changed is the loads across T10 and the loads across L1. So what happens is on an average week, if SEPA is providing all the loads for Petersburg and Wrangell, then we can sum all those loads up and we can divide that by the lake megawatt hours per foot of lake that we have in Tai'i, for example. That would give us the number of days. If, for example, we start a diesel campaign, the loads across T10 are reduced significantly. And so KBU or SEPA does not know what the loads really are. We know what our loads are. And so at that rate, that needle will jump up because it's an average of the previous week's loads on SEPA system. And how long can we support those loads?
Okay. So we had 29.6 days with SWL existing and 48.7 days with remaining reserve. That was the category. Those were added all of a sudden into that gauge.
As part of the Tuesday operations call, we were requested to add those.
Okay. And then that dramatically impacted the total number of days. So we, at one point, we were down like into our yellow, and then all of a sudden we were up at 50 some days when they were added in. So that was requested by the utilities to change that number?
They requested that they would like to know how much water, what the water in Swan Lake would do to the number of days, A, and what the remaining reserve that KPU's agreement with SEPA would do to the number of days, B. And so we added those two to the operations.
That created almost a 50% increase in number of days with total generation capacity days remaining.
If you're looking at last week's?
Last week was taken out.
So if you're looking at anything when there was diesel on, the loads were reduced significantly. So for example, in mid-January, we had a really cold snap. And Petersburg and Ketchikan and Wrangell loads went up about 30%. Because they went up 30%, what that gauge was showing every week on a nice regular basis dropped because loads went way up. As the loads go down, as the warm days get warmer, instead of seeing that gig